Yes, welcome back to the show here on World Football Daily. I know Raf is very excited to have our next guest back on the WFD airwaves, and I'm very excited to have a chat with him for the first time that I've been lucky enough to meet him. Owen O'Callaghan from the late great Fox Soccer Report, the man and the maestro behind the microphone on Fox's flagship football show. How are you doing, Owen? It's a pleasure to have you back here on WFD, mate.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure doing a show, and thanks so many for having me once again.
We're always open to your business, my man. It's been a very weird weekend in the Premier League. First and foremost, we had this epic Sunday, this Super Sunday, if you will. What did you make of the Manchester United-Tottenham game, though? Slightly disappointed, weren't you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think firstly, we definitely need to give Spurs credit for coming away with a point. I think they definitely deserve something from the game. And they had a litany of chances, obviously, before Clint Dempsey popped up so dramatically in injury time to net the equaliser. From a Manchester United perspective, I was impressed. You know, I mean, obviously, they've played such open football for the campaign up to this point. They've left themselves vulnerable at the back, and most notably against Spurs back at Old Trafford earlier on in the campaign. So it was nice to see them a little bit more rigid. And I think the formation and the names that Ferguson selected was interesting, particularly when you look ahead to something like Champions League. You know, that kind of midfield trio of Carrick, Jones and Cleverley really did their job very, very well. Carrick had another terrific game. And I was very impressed with Jones as well. He offered Raphael a lot more support, and obviously they isolated Gareth Bale, who was really largely a passenger. Obviously he had a couple of chances that went narrowly wide. De Gea made one great save from him in particular as well. But you know, it's again, you know, Ferguson will be unhappy that they left themselves a little bit vulnerable. You know, when it was 1-0 for such a long time, you're always run the risk of something dramatic happening. You're just one chance away, really, from allowing the opposition back into a game. So, you know, from that perspective, perhaps the counter-attack could have been a little bit sharper in the second half. They did have a couple of half chances. So, you know, that's potentially worrying. But it was great to see somebody like Danny Welbeck. You know, obviously, a lot of headlines devoted to Wayne Rooney being left on the bench, and Welbeck selected, you know, instead of him, and Welbeck again stepping up to the plate. I thought he had a fine game, and I think just as I was watching the game, and throw this out for listeners and see what people make of it, but he just reminds me very much of Thomas Müller at Bayern Munich. That kind of languid player. He obviously conventionally, you know, doesn't you know, he's not a flashy player, but he puts a lot of graft, a lot of hard work into it, and he's also got just terrific ability, and can turn on some very good pace at times as well, and he seems to be just a very intelligent player. And you know, when you've got a situation like this where he's preferred over Wayne Rooney, obviously Rooney's still coming back and you know, trying to get as fully fit as he can. But just a testament to how much Welbeck has grown as a player. I thought he stood out really, really well. But credit Spurs as well, you know, under AVB. You know, they dug deep, and in that second half, they created a decent amount of chances. And as I said at the beginning, I think they thoroughly deserved at least a point from that game.
David De Gea could possibly be criticised for the part he played in Tottenham's equaliser. Arguably could have imposed himself more when coming for that cross, could have got a better punch on it. We've questioned his abilities before in this kind of imposing himself in his own 18-yard box. Do you point a finger of blame at all at the Spanish keeper?
I think I do, definitely in the context of that goal. And I think it might actually, it could actually come down to something that Manchester United have probably worked too hard you know, with De Gea on doing it. I think, you know, it's one of those situations where perhaps on the training pitch, they've told him, they've instructed him, listen, if you're not sure, you know, if physically you're being, you know, beaten around and thrown around the place by someone who's challenging for a ball, just get your fist to it and just try to punch it away. And I think maybe, you know, you've seen De Gea a couple of times throughout this season elected to punch away regardless of pressure. So I think it could be something that's just ingrained in his game now, just from kind of overtraining. And you know, maybe his mind is in that zone where he isn't confident still with the physicality of the game, and he just feels, well, listen, I can just punch it away, I can get away with it. And you know, in a cold light of day, when you get a weak punch in injury time against Spurs and then they conjure an equaliser, that the finger of blame will fall in De Gea's direction. But in saying that, I think, you know, United will have to pat him on the head as well, because he made a couple of terrific saves. The one from Clint Dempsey, obviously, you know, Dempsey after the game saying that I was turning away to celebrate. You know, it was one of those ones where you just know it's going into the net, and somehow he just gets a touch and deflects it wide. And as well, I thought his save from Jermaine Defoe, low to his left at his near post, you know, Defoe just turns on a sixpence and shoots it just all in one movement. And he scurried across and dealt with it very well, actually. And then there was the save he made from Bale, a little deflection off Rio. He was, you know, wrongfully going the wrong way and just sticks out a leg and saves it. So I think he's certainly not a conventional goalkeeper. You know, and I think that's one reason why he divides opinion so much, that, you know, he's as skinny as a wire, and he doesn't look like a big imposing figure of like goalkeepers, you know, down to the years we've kind of grown accustomed to. But he is a great shot stopper. Now, whether or not that's going to be enough, whether or not there's going to be a couple of other incidents that might cost United further on down the road, we shall have to wait and see. He's still a very young man, and I think we shouldn't forget that. I think that sometimes gets overlooked. But you know, he will have to deal with this. Again, Ferguson saying after the game he's going to have to look at the incident and see just how much you know of the blame falls at De Gea's door. But I think you're right. I think it's a goalkeeping error, and I think De Gea is just once again going to have to dust himself down and pick himself up after that.
A team that were causing errors all over the pitch were Arsenal on Sunday, especially in that first 45 minutes. They've got this Jekyll and Hyde personality, so to speak, at the moment, Owen. Where does Arsene Wenger go wrong with this Arsenal side at the moment? What are the problems that he still needs to address with the Gunners team?
Well, how long do we have, Oliver, I wonder? because it's eerily similar to last season, actually. And I remember, obviously, at the start of last term, they had a disastrous array of results right at the beginning of the season, and obviously quick flurry in the transfer markets, and it was kind of a stopgap solutions for a couple of players that are still actually in the first team. But they had 36 points from the same stage last year, and funnily enough, they had three straight defeats as well around this time. I think it was to Fulham, Swansea, and then United. So, again, harks back to similarities. But last year as well, after that, I think it was a 2-1 defeat to United, they drew their next game with Bolton and then went on this seven-game run, seven straight wins, that really put them on the right road again. Now, the question is, can Wenger do it once more? The question is, you know, Arsenal last season, you know, for the most part, were a disaster. I mean, what you need to try to do at every kind of season once it starts, you need to try to do better than you were last year. That's at the very least, that's what you're striving to do. Is it going to be enough for Arsenal if they get a third place in the Champions League and you know, automatic qualification to the tournament? Is that going to be enough for the fans? You know, chances are they're not going to get that this season. I think they were blessed. Last year, they still had Van Persie. Can Theo Walcott keep scoring goals? I'm not sure if he can. And will Giroud be able to step up? So there's a lot of questions. Now, I made the fatal error last year of questioning Wenger at the beginning of the campaign, asking strong questions about him. Was he the right man? And to be honest, I think it was right to question Wenger. I think it was, you know, I had come to the stage where we needed to be hard on him, and we needed to be hard on Arsenal as a football club, because if they've gone so long way with a trophy, the fans are frustrated, even though fans find themselves in that weird situation, like being in a long-term relationship, that, you know, you're in such a cozy sort of situation with somebody that you care, you love and you admire greatly, but you do have days where you get frustrated. Am I making the right decision? Should I stick with this person? Or is there better off, you know, am I better off going out there, getting back to the dating scene and picking up someone fresh and new? that's where Arsenal fans find themselves at the moment. And I think it's okay for them to be in that situation because, like, as you can see, that Chelsea game, they played for 45 minutes. You know, from Chelsea's perspective, they were coming off that Swansea game. Southampton coming back from 2-0 down, and suddenly Chelsea after 90 minutes are a bit of a laughing stock, and Rafa Benitez again is pointing. So Chelsea were there for the taking. Arsenal started so slowly. They're second to every ball. They lacked hunger. They lacked determination. They lacked a desire. And it was interesting, always watching the game. And you're always looking, you know, I suppose not everyone's looking for it, but body language is always important. And, you know, you're looking at how much do these players want it. In that Arsenal team against Chelsea, Theo Walcott, and I've talked to your players, which says an awful lot. I mean, obviously, Walcott, from a goal-scoring perspective, has stepped up to the plate this season, and he has delivered. But Abu Diaby is their next most senior player. You look elsewhere, Bakary Sagne has been there for a while. Kieran Gibbs. These are all, I mean, particularly Walcott and particularly Gibbs, are still very young players. You know, Wilshere, effectively, is a senior player now in this Arsenal team. And when you compare and contrast to the other teams that are competing at the top of the Premier League at the moment, they have senior players. They have experience. They have players that have been there for a nice amount of years. They know the club. They're kind of warriors. They're at an age where they're in their peak. And every weekend they're very, very consistent in how they play. And Arsenal don't seem to have that. You know, you hark back to something like I mentioned earlier on, and that transfer window from last season, where you know Wenger had his back against the wall. He had to act in that transfer window, and he brought in Per Mertesacker and Mikel Arteta. Arteta obviously has many admirers, but Mertesacker has started 18 league games for Arsenal this season. Now, is he a commanding, is he a dominant Premier League centre-back? I'm not sure he is. And also, if he was a stopgap solution last year in a transfer window, what's he still doing in this Arsenal starting 11 if he's just a stopgap? There are questions. I think it's right to question it. But I think we should still give them some time because last season he turned it around. Now, the biggest problem for him is that they've lost their best player. You know, they've brought in the likes of Giroud, who at times, yeah, like against Newcastle, comes in and he looks decent at the very least. There are other times, you know, games against Chelsea where he needs to step up. He misses a sitter. Chelsea go down the other end of the field and score. So that's a problem. The likes of Podolski, has he flattered to deceive? Cazorla, does he need to be more consistent? So when there is this amount of questions populating every discussion about Arsenal, it's never a good thing. There are other problems, obviously, behind the scenes in the way the club is being run. They have signed Walcott, obviously, to a new deal. They've paid his wages up, which is positive. They've got Wilshere. They've signed, obviously, that group of British players to long-term deals, which is great. But these questions still abound. And, you know, for instance, if they... Then, you know, they've got a really important period of games coming up, Oliver, actually. They've got, obviously, Wednesday night game against West Ham, which is their game in hand. But January 30th, Liverpool at home, followed by Stoke at home, followed by Sunderland away. Then they've got the first leg against Bayern. And then they've got that game against Aston Villa at home as well. So they've got these litany of games. If they can turn a corner and if they can get a couple of wins, you know, in quick succession under their belts, again, you look at the comparisons to last year, maybe it's good enough for Champions League. If it's not, come the end of the season, we're going to be scratching our heads again. And you know what? The likes of you and me are still going to be having these discussions with people about, you know, what Arsenal are going to do next. Where's it all going to end? And I think inevitably, there's only going to be one conclusion. That's going to be Wenger is going to go.
I was going to say that's the conclusion that most Arsenal fans seem to be coming to right now, Owen, that Wenger needs to go. When you look at the top six, top seven even in the Premier League right now, Manchester United, Manchester City, Tottenham, Everton and Liverpool all playing most of the time with two strikers up front. Now, we've seen this one striker with three behind, like Chelsea play, was very popular maybe 18 months ago. Liverpool especially finding a lot of joy in the first two games when Sturridge and Suarez have played together. What's been the difference in the change of going to two strikers? Should Chelsea and Arsenal wake up and smell the coffee and adopt a same similar kind of stance on their front line?
Well, I think it harks back to the personalities of the manager, firstly, and also the capabilities of the players in the actual squad. You know, I think you look at say Arsenal last year and just. At times, from a counter-attacking perspective, how kind of irresistible they were, and you know they had Walcott, you know, in a wide area, Van Persie through the middle, and it worked a treat. I think with two up front, yes, and you can argue that you know teams like Liverpool are adopting it. you know, that there is still this kind of mentality as to it's not really two up top. It's one through the middle, and he's got kind of a support. You know, take Liverpool, for example. Sturridge through the middle and Suarez tucked in a little bit behind him, almost in a bit of a roaming role. Manchester United, you know, playing against Spurs at the weekend. Yeah, it was Van Persie, but he was getting support from Welbeck, Kagawa as well, who also had a bit of a roaming role. So the kind of, you know, two up front and kind of from a 4-4-2 kind of perspective. I'm not sure if it's there anymore, but is that when you play two, you know, straight strikers through the middle, it affects other areas of your side, most notably in central midfield. And I think, you know, the whole mentality of Arsenal, you know, they, for instance, get rid of Song to Barcelona. You know, you look at who's there to replace him. You look at Arteta's out at the moment. So if you through the middle, two quintessential strikers and have a bit of a partnership, you know, are they strong enough in the middle of the park to actually deal with that change? You know, are they quick enough in transition to properly get back and align as a formation and to get men behind the ball? Also, how does it actually have a knock-on effect to your kind of playmakers in the team, like Cazorla, who kind of flits between midfield and attack? So you've got all these kind of questions. I'm not sure if if you know, sides like Chelsea and Arsenal should have two strikers up front. I think it, you know, hark back to when Torres was first signed by Chelsea, and you know, you kind of had Drogba already there. You know, people threw out the suggestion of playing Torres and Drogba, you know, together in the same team. Again, you looked at it and you even looked at it aesthetically and said, oh, I'm not sure if that's going to work. You know, you looked at kind of Torres' record as a striker, particularly with Liverpool, where he played through the middle and had a constant supply line from somebody like Gerrard. He was just pinging passes in behind defences. He was allowed to use his pace and acceleration to get in behind and scored so many of his Liverpool goals that way. So, you know, it comes back to personalities and really for the most part, you know, you looked at, say, Van Persie and even Rooney. You know, they've played on and off, you know, throughout this campaign. And I think it was, you know, that one Champions League game where, you know, Rooney dropped deep and was able to set up Van Persie for an absolutely beautiful goal over the top. Van Persie had like a finish at a far corner. That was a kind of a link up. And I think maybe the days of partnerships, you know, involving a front two in most kind of basic sense is kind of over and done with for the moment. I mean, you know, you're constantly, you know, revolving. There's constant kind of revolutions going on, and it's very cyclical. And so sometimes, you know, you see things come back into fashion. But for the most part, I don't think it's certainly going to cause, you know, Arsenal, or it's certainly not going to benefit Arsenal to tinker with two up top. I just don't think it suits them. Similarly with Chelsea, obviously they've got Demba Ba there now as well. But you know, you look at where Demba Ba's strengths were at Newcastle and, you know, West Ham as well, is very much kind of as a main focal point of attack with support from elsewhere. You know, we've talked about Torres as well. So I'm not sure if playing to the top is kind of the solution to the problems, to be honest.
You mentioned Newcastle United there, and just quickly before we let you go, Owen, I've got to ask you about their fall and their slide down the table, especially this season after what happened last year and such an impressive year under Alan Pardew. Where are the problems lying? Everybody said it could be Kabay, and the fact that he's been out for so long. He was back this weekend, and they still didn't look at a great side and ended up losing at home to Reading.
Yeah, I mean, Newcastle, you know, I mean, you talk about kind of contrasts in teams and you know, how fortunes kind of ebb and flow over a period of time. And I think their run of form this season, I think, says more about how well they did last year than it does really about where they are this season. Certainly, I think they're grossly underachieving this year. But I think last season, they were grossly overachieving. You know, they caught everybody by surprise. And I think, you know, they obviously signed a couple of players. They came in, they had an instant impact. But as well as that, and I remember at the time talking constantly about it, they had such a solid foundation to work from. I think for the first dozen games last year, where they were just so impressive and dropping very, very minimal amount of points, they had the same back five, goalkeeper and four defenders for all those games. And Stephen Taylor picked up an injury. He was out for a while, and suddenly, you know, they started dropping more points. And, you know, they didn't look to be that kind of same irresistible force as they were earlier on in the season. You know, and, you know, it's funny, you fast forward 12 months And you talk about back fours. Obviously, Stephen Taylor is only now coming back from an injury. All of this talk about Colaccini, who desperately looks like he's going to be leaving the club, which is a huge blow for them. You had Ryan Taylor at left back, a little bit of a makeshift left back at the time last season, and you had Danny Simpson at right back. So you look at the back four now, really it's kind of completely changed, and particularly if they lose Colaccini psychologically as well, it's another major blow to have to contend with. Further out the pitch, I think, you know, they've obviously had problems in, you know, Cisse started the season poorly, you know, regarding his form. And then they always had this cloud hanging over Demba Ba's future anyway. You know, it was the contract that they signed him to originally. And that affects dressing room morale as well. You know, the manager talking so openly about the fact that, listen, come January, we could lose Demba Ba because of this clause in his contract. And that stuff, you know, when Demba Ba is really the best consistent player in your side, you're going to chat about that amongst yourselves. What are we going to do when he's gone? You know, is there other people here who can pick up the slack? And really, you know, we sit here now, we're looking at players in that Newcastle lineup, and are there players in that lineup who can pick up the slack? I don't think there is. Kabai obviously returning against Reading with that splendid free kick was a huge bonus for them. But then again, he was carted off injured as well. Obviously, they have to be very, very careful with him. So, it is interesting. I certainly think that they're not going to be forced into a kind of a relegation. Well, you know what? We're sitting here in January, toward the end of January. Maybe they will be dragged into a bit of a dogfight. I think they're definitely, and I hate using this phrase, but they are too good to go down. They've got a lot of quality. But I do think that you're seeing the right sort of level of some of these players come to the fore. I think last season, we were being spoiled just a little bit by certain Newcastle players, I think. And it's an interesting thing. I mean, obviously, Pardew there has signed a huge deal. There's pressure on him now. You obviously got a manager like Ashley who could, you know, at the drop of a hat, make any sort of managerial change. You talk about contrasting situations. Certainly, I don't think anyone was expecting this fall from grace. But they should be fine. I mean, the defeat against Reading was awful. You know, it really was poor. You know, and in front of your home fans, you know, everyone's going to slump off and just talk about, you know, what a disastrous game it was, and you're going to kind of drink long into the night and think long into the night about, you know where it all went wrong. But I think Newcastle should be okay. You know, they've got decent support, they've got decent players, and I think they're better than a relegation dogfight, to be honest.
Owen, if it ends up that Newcastle gets stuck in that third from bottom position, that will be on our final show of the season, one of the lines that we'll be playing. They're too big to get into a relegation battle. Owen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today, mate, and getting you back on the WFD airwaves. Is there anywhere where we can catch your stuff more regularly, out and about in the beautiful world of sports football journalism?
The long-awaited kind of website should be up and running hopefully next week. That's kind of been a bane of my life over the last little bit. So as soon as that goes up, there'll be a blog attached to that, and I'll be scribbling at length about various things football related. And I think probably the best place to find out more about that is just to follow on Twitter, and you know, there'll be constant updates along with very rambling kind of stream of consciousness stuff, all football related, of course.
Fantastic. Owen, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, mate, and we look forward to get you back on as soon as we can later on this season, mate. Take care and have a very good evening indeed.
Cheers, man. Always a pleasure. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. Owen O'Callaghan there, the former host of the late great Fox Soccer Report, joining us here on World Football Daily to talk about all things Premier League football. And Owen, just a fantastic man to listen to when it comes to talking about English football, especially back now in Dublin and in the Ireland kind of area, back from the US of A, but I'm sure he'll be heading back over at some time soon indeed. You can follow Owen on his Twitter account, EOINOCallaghan. That's capital EOIN, capital O, Callaghan, CALLAGHAN, all one word. And you can follow Owen there on Twitter and catch his news and views from around the world of football. We've got more of that coming up in just a minute here on WFD. We'll be right back after Rafa Gonzalez gives us some more tunes.